BBC Radio Solent Sport
with Kevin James.
Just 13 days to go until Hampshire's cricketers get their new season underway. So we're back at the Aegeus Bowl with our annual Hampshire Cricket Forum. Between now and 8 o'clock, we'll be assessing Hampshire's chances. Now they're back in Division 1 of the Championship. We'll be talking about the England cricket team, plus one or two other matters as well. And just maybe the name of Kevin Peterson might crop up between now and 8 o'clock.
The cricket season.
BBC Radio Solent.
The home of live sport across the South.
We're in the Robin Smith Suite in the main pavilion, and on the panel this evening, next to me on my left, Chairman Rob Bransgrove. Next to him is Director of Cricket Giles White. On my right, first team coach Dale Benkenstein and captain Jimmy Adams. In front of us, a packed room made up of many Hampshire members and a few Solent listeners who contacted us to be part of the audience this evening. Now, normally, I would start by looking forward to the season ahead, but having been promoted to Division 1 as champions of Division 2, might be just worth casting our minds back to last September in those last round of matches. Hampshire went to Glamorgan in second place, but all three outcomes in terms of promotion or non-promotion were possible. A nervy time, Jimmy Adams.
Starting with me. It was indeed. Winning the toss, probably 30 for 4 or 53 for 5, there you go. Yeah, it didn't feel particularly great at that point, and the nerves were certainly jangling, but we had done well all year. We found a way, found a partnership and turned the game around. But yeah, hell of a way to finish the season.
I guess, Dale, that at that moment, all your hard work can come undone.
Oh, it was all going to plan. No, I think that is the beauty of four-day cricket or test cricket, I suppose, because you have got time to fix things. And in 2020 is even less, in 50-over cricket a little bit more, but in four-day cricket you're never out of the game and you've never won the game till right at the end. So I think that's hopefully what I think the team learned. I think they're starting to really enjoy four-day cricket, enjoy the patience part of it, enjoy the time that it takes to actually win games, and I think the whole season was so exciting that hopefully we can take that attitude and that passion for the four-day cricket into this season, because they've always had it for the white ball. So I think it was a real bonus at the end of the season to have that passion for every form of the game.
Roger, you must have been very proud of your team.
Well, I'm always quite proud of my team, actually, as it happens. And I think what was great about last season was we've enjoyed quite a lot of limited over success over the last decade or so. But I knew that a number of members were asking about our commitment to the four-day game, and it was nice to return as the champions of the second division and to do it in such a stylish manner in the last game of the season with one of our young stars featuring very heavily and one of our more experienced players, of course, with the ball doing equally as well. So, yes, we felt very, very proud, although that feeling probably diminished as the evening wore on, as you might remember.
No. Was that the night I lost my... Mike?
It was, yes.
Yes, it was, yeah. Okay, we're moving on. Giles, I mean, you became director of cricket before the start of the season. There seemed to be an awful lot of planning going on for the season. And by terms of finishing Division 2 champions, it kind of worked, didn't it?
You'd cast your mind back, and as Dale mentioned earlier on, we had a lot of success in one-day cricket, less so in four-day cricket. But in terms of recruitment, the likes of Smith and also Dale himself gave us an edge, and Abbott joined us too as overseas player, and I think it gave us a group of players that were able to be successful in the longer form of the game, and that was proved by the end of the season. And also that continued success in one day cricket is important to us too, and this year we've got that challenge ahead of us.
Could I just ask you, before I ask Dale his thoughts, but first year as first team coach for Dale, what sort of qualities did he bring that helped the side?
Yeah,
because I will ask him, he probably doesn't want to answer that, but what did he bring to the side?
I think what he's very good at is bringing in that tactical awareness. Having captained Durham for a number of years and been very successful, I think he gave us that tactical awareness and bringing everything back to the moment, so we didn't get ahead of ourselves in any of the games. And I think that helped Jimmy. I think Jimmy would be the first to say that. And it certainly helped the group just take it step by step, which is what four-day cricket is about, essentially. Taking it step by step, not getting too far ahead of yourselves, and continuing that pressure throughout the game. So, excellent, Dale was.
Just see the way he looked over. First season, I mean, it can't have gone much better, could it, for you?
Well, we could have won the 2020. that was quite disappointing on the finals day, but yes, I think it was, you know, very pleasing, and I've sort of gone now. You know, I really am focused on this season, and that's really what I've been putting my mind to. And I think the team is, because we've got a huge challenge ahead of us. Going up is, it's like making the international team. It's like making the England team is just the first step. Staying there is the really tough thing, and I think that's where we are now as a club, as a team. To get into the first division is just that first step. So, you know, staying there and competing really well there is really where I'm focused on. Last year's, it's gone.
Sure. Well, I mean, you've got experience, as you say. You've won a championship medal with Durham as well. So, you know, couple, sorry, two. You're right, yes,
three.
Sorry.
Three.
Three,
yeah.
Jimmy, you said two initially, and I agree with you. Anyway, so, OK, plenty of experience. What is it that the team have got to do here in Division 1? Because you've kind of hinted there that the important aim is to stay in Division 1, which is not easy in itself with nine teams. So what is it the team's got to do this year?
I think every year now we have different players coming in, so it's trying to get that team to find their way of playing. So that's the first thing. But it isn't much different to what we've done. I think we've all chatted as a team, and in my opinion, it's just there are going to be no easy games. I think in second division you can have two really tough days, and then teams just can't compete with you anymore. And on day three and day four, normally it's day three, they just sort of fall over if you keep your standards. And I think in Division One we're going to have a lot of games are going to go 4 days. You know, it's going to be, no, they don't give up. They've got a lot of depth in their squads, and I don't think there's any easy teams. So I think you're going to have 16 tough games as opposed to last year where we maybe had probably 13 or 12. Yeah.
Jimmy, you've played Division One, of course. Are you expecting things to have moved on a bit in the 3 years since you were last there?
Yeah, I think so. I think the gap is starting to widen, you know, year on year. I don't think it's something that's insurmountable by any stretch. I think, you know, come September, if we're still in Division One, that would be great. But I also think we shouldn't underplay the squad we have in terms of how we can compete and do much better than that. But first and foremost, as Dale said, we've got to find how we want to play. I think it's very similar to last year, if not the same as last year, but the understanding that we've got to do it for longer and probably at a slightly higher level than at times last year.
Rod, lots of ins and outs, comings and goings for the county this year. Do you think what the business that's been done over these 6 months is enough to carry the county through?
Well, yes, obviously I do. I mean, it's always an interesting position at the end of years, because that's where, you know, you look at the core of your squad and you say, right, what can we do to best enhance this squad? We've got some very, very good young batsmen coming through the ranks who are probably first team ready. So we didn't look too much at recruiting batters for the year, even though Kevin Peterson might have been available.
But has he moved nearer?
He has, actually, yes. He's moved to Surrey. And Anyway, that's a different subject altogether. I think we felt that really in the first division we need to have some strength in depth and cover in the seam bowling department, and we've got some work to do with some of our younger seamers, and so we've really bolstered up on the seam front with experience. There's nothing much better than experience, especially if you're trying to bring younger players through. So most of the movement, I think, has been in that area. And I'm pretty happy, actually, with the outcome of it all. We've got a very, very useful all-rounder in Gareth Bergh, who's impressed all of us, I think, throughout the winter, returning from a shoulder injury that many thought would curtail his career permanently. So having seen the squad on paper and spoken about it quite a lot to particularly Giles, but also Dale and Jimmy from time to time, I'm pretty happy that we've got a squad that's going to go out there and really compete with the First Division.
I mean, feel free, Dale, just to sort of butting at times, but I want to talk about one or two of the bowlers, because obviously that's, I guess that's where most of the discussion is centred on, isn't it? I think, Giles, you know, I guess most people feel in the room, I'm sure you'll agree, and tell me if it's not true, that the kind of the batting is almost taking care of itself, but there are lots of permutations, or could be lots of permutations with the bowlers. Did I put that all right?
Yeah, I think you look at the squad, yes, our batting has been pretty consistent over the years, and it picks itself in many ways if you look at the championship lineup. And the one-day lineup's been very similar. Batting order pretty much over the last few years, but the bowling has been harder to get that consistency for a number of reasons. But we brought in Adams and Bird, who are both high-quality bowlers. Edwards was signed recently. Again, a high-quality player that's played international cricket. So we're hopeful that the conditions will suit the particular bowlers at the time they're with us. And it gives us that squad of bowlers that we can rotate and manage, and they'll bring us success.
Andre Adams, okay, knee injury, and then had surgery during the winter. Where are you with him at the moment?
He arrives next week, and he'll come back in, and basically we'll get him out bowling as soon as we can. He has a slight injury of his elbow at the moment, having an injection this week. So when he gets back, he'll be back into bowling and we'll get him fit as soon as we can and hopefully play him in the first game. But if not, that's not a train smash and we'll get him ready for the second one.
Sure. Knee and elbow. Not many important areas there.
Yeah, he's got the injury worm is working its way around his body at the moment. I think, you know, he is a crucial player to get fit, and but he also is a very good professional. I think we don't probably mention the support staff enough as well. Tihan and Mike were a huge part of our success last year as well in keeping all our players on the field. And I have a massive amount of faith in them. Once we get Andre here, obviously we'd like him to be ready for that first game, and he's doing everything he can. But once he's here and works with our support staff, I'm sure that he'll be ready to go. So he's a very proud cricketer. He's very proud in his own performances, and I'm sure that he'll be wanting to be flying by the time we play against Nottinghamshire anyway.
For sure. I guess we can't talk about the bowlers without mentioning Matt Cole's departed during the winter. I know you probably don't want to say too much, Rod, but I'm going to push you anyway. a good talent. I mean, that's a big loss, isn't it, in terms of cricketing ability in the middle?
Yeah, it's a big loss on the field. Mm. And, you know, we acknowledge that, although we've replaced a lot of that with the signing of Gareth Bergh. But it didn't work out, and when I said we didn't want to say too much more, it's, you know, if you've ever had a broken marriage or something, you know, at the end of the day, you don't dig into the reasons why it didn't work out. It simply didn't work, and that's the end of it. You move on, and that's what we've done. And and we've got cover in other areas. Other people will have opportunities, and we wish him luck back home, which is where he wanted to go, back to Kent. So, you know, at the end of the day, it seems to me that was probably an inevitability at some stage.
All right. So, Josh, just let me go back. So you've got Andre Adams for the first three months. Yeah. Jackson Bird, first 3 months.
Jackson's open-ended, so it depends on what happens with selection for the Ashes series. Obviously, if he gets picked, he'll leave us, but otherwise it's open-ended and we'll see where he is at that particular time, and it might be that we keep him on for a longer period.
Right, OK. Has anybody got any thoughts about the season ahead and some of the bowlers and anything that's going on? Yes, we've got one down here. Kane, if you want to come down. I'm going to ask about Brad Wheel as well, because that's one name that seems to have featured a little bit from the pre-season tour of Barbados. The microphone's just being passed. If you just say your name, sir, and where you're from, it gives a bit of colour.
My name's Michael Bennett. I come from Reading, but I'm a country member. I'd just like to know what's happened to Michael Bates. I'd like to know that he's got fixed up all right.
I'll
pick that one up. He hasn't at this stage, but he's been training with Essex in the winter, and he's also been coming in and having some hits with myself and the coaching staff. So we're very much proactive with him, trying to find him his next move. He's going to play for Wiltshire to start with during the summer, and then hopefully if things fall for him, he'll get picked up by a county and get taken on somewhere before the end of the season. So that's where we are with Michael.
Yeah, that's good news. I mentioned Brad Wheel there because that seemed to be a name that was coming out of the pre-season trip to Barbados. I know you know him quite well, Dale. In fact, you had a hand in bringing him over.
Yeah, I think we, as Rod alluded to earlier, we are probably a bit light in local talent in the seam bowling department, so we're always looking to try and fill that gap. And he is a provincial under 19 player. He has a British passport from the same area that I'm from. I don't know him very well. He's just a little bit younger than me. But he really impressed us, and his whole attitude is that he wants to come and play his cricket in England. He doesn't want to play in South Africa, and I think that is probably one of the most important parts of him coming over. He did have a few options. I think Surrey was one, but I really feel that he has opportunities here. And having watched him in Barbados for his age, I think he was quite impressive. And I was thinking maybe after this year we'll know where he's going. But I think that he may even play a part in our season this year.
That's good news, right? One to look out for there. Just one quick more on the bowling attack. I did get a letter from Frank Peters in Southampton. One of his questions was, our bowling attack looks quite weak for Division 1 cricket. Well, we've just been discussing it, so maybe not so much. We seem to be expecting an awful lot from young players like Tom Barber. That's one we haven't mentioned, the left arm quick. Are attempts being made to strengthen the seam attack? Well, I think we've answered that question, but we haven't mentioned Tom Barber. Giles?
Yeah, Tom was obviously out in Barbados with us, and he's developing well. But with Tom, with young cricketers, it does take time for them to reach their potential, and the timing of them getting to the first team is important in that development. So Tom's going well. He bowled well, certainly in the last game in Barbados, and he's got the rest of pre-season to put his name in the hat for selection for the first game.
Okay, that's the bowlers. Jimmy's sitting on the end there quite patiently.
Happily.
You're trialling a new helmet.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Do you remember that?
Yep.
Yeah, you've been doing it this week. Just explain a little bit. I mean, I think we all know why it's come about. Unfortunately, Phil Hughes before Christmas. But just explain a little bit about the modification to the helmet that you're trialling and if it's working out or not.
For guys or anyone who hasn't seen it, it's called a stem guard. It fixes quite easily to the back of the helmet. And it fits, for me, it fits very easily. I know Missouri, who are producing it, have trialled it on various different people. Many would have seen Kumar Sangakkara playing fairly well with it in the World Cup without too much trouble. And, for some it will fit well and will work really well, and others it might not. It will be a bit uncomfortable, but they're trying to work a balance between the safety and the functionality of it, and also how players feel when they're wearing it, and I think they've got a really good balance at the moment, and I don't think it'll be very long before plenty of the players are wearing one. We had an incident here last week, and certainly a number of the players have asked me if I could speak to Sam there to see if I get hold of a few more. So it's moving in the right direction, because we certainly don't want to see another incident like before Christmas, if it's possible to prevent that sort of thing.
So nobody else in any of the counties trialling this at the moment?
I was surprised as anyone the other day when you asked me. I didn't realise that. It's still really being trialled. So, I live 500 metres from where Missouri are based. It's very easy for Sam to pop in and stick one on my helmet, I suppose. But it's...
I don't think it'll be too long before it's rolled out to as many people as they can.
Mm. Okay, well, that'll be good news, hopefully. I've got a couple of... There's another question, actually, here from Frank. I've got a couple on email, which I'll come to in a moment. It's kind of about the championship sort of previously and what might happen this year. Frank says there were only 3 positive results from 8 championship matches last season. He put a percentage in, 37%. The wicket for the last match against Kent was especially disastrous, he says, and could have cost us promotion. Just for those of you that weren't sure, it was a draw, but I think I'm right in saying Kent scored 500 and something, and Hampshire, I think, were 9 down in the second innings trying to save the game.
That's Tomo what. Played, well, Sean Irvin, but, you know, played a beautiful innings, and Will Smith, and Tomo did his job at number 11.
That's right, I remember, yeah. What action has been taken during the winter to spice the wicket up?
Whoa.
I bet Jimmy can't wait to hear that one. And give us more entertaining cricket than we've had to endure over the last few seasons. I think it's fair to say there's been a lot of draws over the last few years, but to be fair, Giles, or even Rod, I mean, the wickets have been fairly green, haven't they, the last couple of years?
I think that's slightly unfair. Mm. I think the wickets were excellent last year. And certainly during the winter, the previous winter, we did look at leaving more grass on the wicket. And I think I'm right in saying that Nigel was groundsman of the year last year for the wickets he's produced. So I think that's slightly unfair. I think that game was actually an excellent game of cricket as well. Again, we'll prepare the wickets in the same way as we did last year. Extra grass, which is just an overseeding, a process of overseeding the wicket that'll give it an even covering of grass. And Nigel and Carl doing an excellent job, and the wicket looks great. So hopefully we'll get some good wickets again this year.
Right, so basically more of the same.
More of the same, summer.
Are you happy with that situation, Rod? I mean, I guess you are, because I guess you decide anyway, or you make part of that decision.
No, I'm not involved in those decisions, but I must say I thought at the end of the year when Nigel was awarded Groundsman of the Year, it was a recognition not just for the season last year, but for 15 years of amazing work to turn this into a world-class playing surface. And bearing in mind that also we produced the wicket which turned around the Test match series, and I just think that he and his staff deserve all of those plaudits and a great deal more for what they've managed to achieve. Those of us that can remember the early years at the Aegeus Bowl, or the Rose Bowl as it was called then, can remember the difficulty that some batsmen had. No names, one sitting on my left.
For the record, Giles, yeah.
You know, I've been on record before as saying it accounted for a number of very promising young careers, this wicket. And, there were sacrifices made to get where we are today. And I don't really recognise that particular comment.
No, I think that's fair enough.
I think we're in a good place now with our wickets.
Okay, this is actually directed at Giles. This is another question from Frank. I'm just looking through some of the others on the email. Actually, Giles knows this question because he had a look at it earlier. I was very disappointed to hear Giles White's comments during the winter about changing the county championship to 3 groups of 6 teams. We've spent 4 seasons trying to get out of Division 2. And he wants to put us straight back there in one fell swoop. Yeah, of course he does. Yeah, that's good for his CV. We should be protecting the county championship, not changing it to bring in a soulless T20 franchise system. I'm sure we'll come on to that in a moment. That is all about making money. Comments from the panel, please. I suppose, Giles, you'd be the first one to have the right
yeah.
reply.
Yeah, and it's an opinion thing, this one, Kev, isn't it? For me, I feel that it's the right time to have an EPL. I think we missed the boat a few years ago. And if we were to have an EPL, it would be fitting into the schedule. Now, how do you fit into the schedule is a question. And again, for me, I could see 10 championship games being a good amount of championship cricket. Having divisions, I think, is important too, because it gives that element of competition and integrity to the competition. And the only way to do that, I believe, is to make 3 divisions, unless you start cutting counties out altogether. Now, if you have 3 divisions, 10 games, that pretty much frees up a month's cricket when you take into account of travel, and that month mid-season could accommodate an EPL. So that's my thinking behind it. That's my personal view. Obviously, Frank is certainly entitled to his. So, that's how it works.
Okay. I guess as we're on to the EPL, I guess we'll carry on. But, Rod, I mean, going back to the 3 groups of 6 teams, You were kind of in favour. Well, no, McLaurin, Lord McLaurin sort of proposed that, I don't know, 10 years ago or something like that. And were you a sort of a fan of that at that time?
Actually, I proposed it. I proposed three groups of seven, as it happens. And the third division would actually have three of the best minor counties teams coming in with an opportunity to develop into first-class counties. And I understand the view of supporters. There's a very parochial feeling about people who support particular clubs and that they want the game to remain the way is best for their club. But I try to think also what's best for the longevity of English cricket. And for the longevity of English cricket, we need to play less of the four-day game, hopefully at a higher standard. And our challenge will be to stay in the first of those three divisions if it happened that way. And then with that additional time, we could create an EPL, which will then provide the counties with the finances that they need not to have to rely on getting the scraps of the international calendar. You know, I think one of the things that really needs to happen in this country is that counties have to get self-sufficient again. And if you look at the counties that don't agree with this proposal, obviously somewhere like Surrey, and remember, I have no particular feelings against Surrey at all, but it's not surprising that they're against an EPL because they're doing very well, thank you very much, with a full calendar of international cricket for 20 years guaranteed by a long-term staging agreement. And then, of course, having a location in south of London where every Friday night they can have a big, you know, booze up at a 2020 match. That's not actually doing anything for the longevity of English cricket. What Cricket Australia saw very early in the piece was that their 2020 competition was an opportunity to engage with young people and bring families back into cricket. And they deliberately marketed it to those people. And they were bringing in tens of thousands of people to those games. And I was absolutely hypnotised by it all. I thought it was fantastic. And that's what this country needs to wake up to. And that is what will protect the long-term interest of all the other forms of the game that we all love. But bear in mind that we're getting older and we're dying off. That's what's happening to us. And we're not replacing ourselves because we're not giving young people what they want. And they don't actually want to come, I'm afraid, at first, to a four-day game of cricket. So in my view, we have to make way for an EPL. We have to recognise that some people will be against it, but I'm sure the new administration of the ECB will be big enough and strong enough to look at what's happened in Australia, look at what's happened in India, and recognise that that's the way that we have to move forward.
Are you a fan of the EPL, or if it happens, Jimmy?
Yeah, Rod summed it up pretty well there. I think it has to happen at some point because financially, as Rod says, we need to make ourselves self-sufficient. And there's various different ways of skinning the cat, really, when it comes to what you want to do with four-day cricket. 10 or 12 championship games, but four-day cricket won't survive, I don't think, if we don't make some changes in the shorter form to, you know, secure the finances. If you want my theory, I've got a theory on four-day. I wonder whether you could have a top division and then of six and then almost a divisional thing underneath of two divisions of six that play off against each other or against the team that finishes bottom of the top division to see if they go on and you end up with 12 games or something like that. But it's along the same lines and I think it's something they need to look at.
Dale, what's your theory?
I think before this World Cup, I would have said keep county cricket going as it is, but I think that England are probably 4 or 5 years behind everyone else in the white ball game. So, and I think we're suddenly starting to see it. So I think Rod's spot on. I think things really do need to happen, and the only way to keep things fresh is to probably eliminate a few of the four-day games. I've always loved four-day cricket, but I think that 10 games is still a lot of cricket, and to keep asking the players to play day in and day out and produce quality is almost impossible. So there has to be some changes, and as I said, I think we're probably 3 or 4 years behind some of the other nations.
Has anybody got any ideas about what they'd like to see in the next few years? No, I mean, what the T20 system in South Africa is not really a Premier League, is it as such? Is it?
No, No, it isn't. But the competition's very well supported by the public. And we only play 10 first-class games. So, you know, everyone really, if you have to be honest, in South Africa, everybody wants to win the T20 competition. That's the main prize. And also that you end up going into Champions League. If you go to Champions League, that's your stage for RPL, and that's where people's careers get kicked off. And you know, as a professional sportsman, if you get into the RPL, you have a real chance of making a very good living out of the game. So it hasn't they haven't quite got to where Australia have, but we also have other, probably a few more technical reasons why. Whereas I think England has the infrastructure in the country to actually support an EPL, and as I said, I think we're probably a few years behind in that.
Kane's at the back there with the mic. Somebody's got a question.
Bob Burrell here from Aldershot. I've watched the Australian Big Bash. Until they're very entertaining for the main. The comments that people have made comparing out there to over here, no, most of their population is in the big cities, whereas most of our population is not in the big cities. If you have a franchise in this ground, for instance, do you call it Southampton or Portsmouth? Or what do you call it? There's a far more fragmented population and such like. So would you get the support here that they get out in Aussie? And I have to admit, it is very well supported. And the other aspect of it, I believe Cricket Australia finance it. So could the ECB finance an English Premier League?
Rod?
The first thing to remember is that Australia is a vast country, and that's why the population is polarised in small areas. This is a small country. You can get anywhere in this country. There are 60, 70 million people, it depends which census you believe or which party you follow. But there are plenty of people. One of the drawbacks we've had in this game, I think, is that we've tended to, because we all love the game that we grew up with, which essentially in our age group was four-day cricket and then the advent of the white ball game, or it wasn't even white ball at first, we found it more difficult to grasp the new concepts. But there's no doubt in my mind that what young people want, and in fact, the market research, which originally was led by our own Stuart Robertson here for the ECB many years ago, demonstrated quite clearly that if we want to bring young people back into this game, if we want to bring women back into the game, we have to give them a game that they feel comfortable going to, they enjoy, and it fits with the modern cult. My view is that it really doesn't matter too much where we put the games. The fact is people will go because the game is attractive. And there may be some differences to the Australian model, but the truth is wherever they've got a proper Premier League system, and that's notably in India and in Australia, it's been a resounding success. Regarding the funding of it, you may remember many years ago reading about a paper that was presented to the ECB called the Stuart Bradshaw paper, which was leaked to the BBC commentary box with a message saying this is a plan to put the smaller counties out of business. Well, I did a lot of work on that paper. And as Mike Soper knows, I actually removed my name from it because my name already had become inflammatory for all sorts of reasons. But the principles of that paper made it absolutely clear how the game would benefit, how it would be funded. We'd even found funders for ECB. Plenty of people want to get involved in cricket, but you're not going to get somebody to involve themselves in a county cricket club when they come along and see, you know, 1,500 people sitting in a 15,000-seater watching a four-day game of cricket. They don't understand the economics of that. Frankly, neither do I in that sense. So we do need to wake up to the reality that the only way we're going to attract young people and families into our sport is to give them what they want, not what we think they should watch.
Mm. Okay. Charles, I'll ask you what you think in a minute. It's just Johnny Botley emailed a couple of questions. There's one for Rod a bit later, which I know he's looking forward to answering. Just on this subject, he says, does the panel not fear that smashing thrash quick cricket is turning the game and the atmosphere into a style akin to American baseball, with the negative ingredients of booze burgers Or booze and burgers. I guess there's a comma there. And fancy dress stag gang. Fancy dress stag gangs. Is it really the same sport once cherished by true cricket lovers?
Again, opinions, isn't it, Kev? For me, it's a great introduction for young people to the game. Yeah, and that's what we're looking at, and essentially what Rod's discussed there. We get a new audience that come in, and then they become engaged by the game itself, and they'll introduce themselves to four-day cricket and beyond to test cricket. So I think that's the way I'd view it. I'd see it as some bringing a new audience to the game, a bit of razzmatazz. I think the game needs that right now. I think, you know, we've talked about it long enough. I think it's time to put it into action. I feel that the new chairman and Tom Harrison as well, the new CEO, have got it in their minds that this is the time to change. So I think it's exciting, and I'm very much on board, and I think it will be very good for the game.
So to sum up, we're basically saying here that slightly less four-day games in the future, an EPL in some shape or form in a few years' time, because obviously it's not going to happen in the next couple of years or so like that. A 50-over game to carry on, are we saying?
Yeah.
It has to carry on, doesn't it? Because of the one-day international situation.
World Cup.
Yeah. So, okay. Thanks for those comments. there's a little thing in here. Actually, let's talk about the ground here and that, because so much has happened over the last few years. We can all see it. In fact, it's still just about light. The hotel to our left is not far off now being completed, much to the relief of Rod, I'm sure, sitting next to us. In the next few weeks, Rod, that's going to be a massive sort of thing, isn't it? When it actually officially opens, you'll be the first one over there jumping up and down for joy, won't you?
Actually, I won't, because I'll be in the Caribbean.
Oh, right.
But I mean, I can't even begin to explain what it means to us to get to the end of this particular journey. I mean, the hotel was propagated in a business plan that we wrote in 2004, finished in 2005. At that stage, we planned to open it in 2011, and it was the core of the business, really. It was the nucleus around which the rest of the business would function. And we've had just about every obstacle known to mankind that has sort of slowed us down and made things difficult. I was going to use a rude word then. I realise it's not quite like...
We're recording.
We can edit it.
I just think, for me and for this club, it's an amazing step forward. And I can't wait for it to open on the 1st of May. And those of you that haven't, well, you won't have seen around it yet, but you need to have a look at it, because I know, and I'll get, maybe Jimmy can say something, because he and some of the boys had a look around yesterday.
Today.
And it's not until you actually get into that hotel, I think, that you realise the pure scale and size and power of it and what it means to this business moving forward. It's a massive step forward to, I don't know what you think, Jim.
Well, it looks very special from here, but when you get inside, it's absolutely stunning. The views, and as Rod alluded to, the sheer scale, it's fantastic. Really is. Quite looking forward to spending my days post-cricket watching some stuff from there, definitely.
If you see any batsmen get out early and then you find them later on the day over there, Giles, that's not going to be good, is it? Actually, I don't know, you both probably noticed the open-air hot tub on the first balcony.
Yeah, the lads took a good look at that, definitely.
I think some of them left the lights on, though. Rod, you're going to...
I was going to say, there's a couple of bedrooms with lights off.
There have been some embarrassing incidents with that sort of thing in the past, but we're trying to avoid those.
It probably doesn't help when the curtain's open at the moment either, does it? A couple of one-day internationals here this year, of course. We've got New Zealand in June. There's Australia in September. We'll talk about those, Rod, but I guess for the next few years, still not that Ashes test that you're desperately hoping for.
Yeah, that's of course a major disappointment, and it's still a wrong that I'd like us to rectify before I move on to pastures new upstairs, hopefully. Well, look, we've got some great fixtures. You know, at the end of the day, we are playing an awful lot of international cricket. Some may say too much and an unsustainable amount. I think I might have some sympathy with that view. I think the next tour of the Australians in England is, I don't know, 2022, 2023. I keep on thinking, how old am I going to be at that stage if I make it? But we're going to keep plugging away at that, because what we built here was precisely what the ECB asked for in their document TSF2, which was published in the year 2000. We've spent over £80 million making all this happen to their prescription and even better. And I feel offended, really, that we've been overlooked for so long. And it's like being on Question Time. but I have huge confidence in Colin Graves. I know him quite well, the incoming chairman of the ECB. And as Giles has said, Tom Harrison, the new chief executive, is a good guy. I'm sure that whatever happens in the future, decisions will be made fairly and appropriately. And I really look forward to that environment.
Do you honestly believe a change of regime now might actually help the ground here and the club and yourself?
Well, it can't do any harm, can it?
Can't be worse, can it? While we're on the subject of international cricket, of course, one big talking point this winter has been the England team and probably the lack of it. We're bringing Dale here from I know you work in county cricket, but from a position of outside, looking in, I guess, from South Africa, that you mentioned it earlier, you feel that the game over here is probably 4 years behind everywhere else. I mean, watching the World Cup this winter, did it honestly look like that? I mean, are we actually that far behind everybody else?
Yeah, I think by the end of it, you're obviously all going in, you think you've got a good side, and then when the others, you compete against the other teams, they just weren't up to scratch, really. I think what also worried me when looking in is they didn't look like they're enjoying it at all. Even before they started losing three or four games in a row. So I think that is one area that I think is so important. We all play cricket. Yes, it's your profession, but you've got to enjoy it. You know, we're all lucky to play cricket. A lot of people would give their left and right arms to go and do what we do. So you have to enjoy it. It is a fantastic means of income. So when I see, I think they look very serious about what they're going about their work, and I think they've probably lost that balance. But I really don't know what is going on there. I haven't been involved. But I'm just saying what I see. And having looked at the team, I think I can come up with a few different players from a batting point of view. What really worries me is I don't think that I have many names apart from probably Chris Wood here in Hampshire with a white ball that I would actually look to take the place of the guys that were there. And I think that is a real worry. You know, I would say that there's a few batters I would change just because you need young players now to start taking this game forward. And I think we've got one, and there's a few around the counties that were in South Africa while the team was playing in the World Cup that could have been there. But what does worry me is the bowling. I don't think there's... I can't come up with many other names that I know they didn't do very well, but I can't come up with many names that I think could replace him.
Well, Jimmy, you obviously bat on the county circuit. To try and help Dale out here, is there anybody that you'd put in that side?
There are plenty of good bowlers on the county scene, but whether, you know, is it the step up to international cricket and playing in a World Cup is a serious challenge. And actually, in Barbados, I was sat down chatting to McNeil and talking through similar, and it's hard to have, you know, certainly there's a group of batters you feel can step in and do, you know, would be very exciting to watch, but the bowling side is a very different kettle of fish, and as Banks says, is a pretty big worry.
Because Mick, I think, is part of the scouting lot on the England scene as a selector. Is he actually
probably dropping a minute there? Right.
So that's a bit of a worry if he can't come up with too many names.
I didn't say that. I said I couldn't.
One of the arguments this winter is the fact that, you know, England don't make big totals. So why would that be? Why can they not? Why do they play the way they do? and everybody else plays the way they do. You know, when you play 50 over cricket, I mean, let's be honest. I watched the first couple of games last year. I watched you guys at Derby. I watched you guys at Lancashire, and you know, you looked like you were playing a 20 over game initially. I mean, I know one was lost, one was won, but you know, you guys seem to be playing in a way that was aiming to an England side.
I mean, it wasn't our greatest competition.
You came bottom in the competition, but
yeah. Again, it's been mentioned a bit. I think a lot of it boiled down to the feeling in the camp. They seem to be, it's been mentioned by a lot of people commenting, or ex-players or players commenting from the outside, but certainly they seem to be frozen and without, you know, what you want in one day cricket. And I believe a strength of ours, you know, since the, you know, a reason behind our one day success in recent years has been the way that some of the senior players have pushed the guys to play with freedom. You know, we're fortunate with Dimi, you know, his mantra was pretty much along that lines, and I think it really helped the guys, especially the younger players, and I don't see that at the international level.
Giles, I mean, just taking that World Cup as a tournament on its standalone, there is a school of thought that says, OK, you're playing in Australia, New Zealand seem to have good weather. If you were to play that same tournament over here, a lot of those players wouldn't play with the same freedom, would they? And wouldn't get away with it anyway.
It depends on the wickets, and I think it depends on the time of the year in England. That dictates slightly how the wickets are. But just going back to the England performance, something else that we don't do is have our players playing in these big tournaments such as the Big Bash and the IPL. And the very best players are playing against each other the whole time and improving their games. They're pushing each other, learning new skills, and taking the level of performance upwards. Unfortunately, the England players aren't involved in that, and they also don't play an awful lot of domestic cricket in this country because they're playing international cricket. So this, again, could be a good reason to have EPL in this country, to develop the one-day game of the player that plays for England, which I think has been stunted to a certain extent because of the lack of opportunity in these big tournaments to play against the very best. Mm.
It was quite interesting in the Big Bash because, obviously, Michael Carberry did quite well. Mm. So did Ben Stokes, did quite well. Somebody else I'm missing, Kevin Peterson, did quite well. And I knew it's taken us 50 minutes to get to Kevin Peterson. All players that aren't part of that England setup. Mm.
That's right.
Discuss. Rod, help me out. Rod, over the years, you've always helped me out. Help me out on this one. So none of them are involved in England. So what's the story?
I don't know. There's no simple answer to all of this. You know, as usual, you know, these issues are usually complicated by a number of different symptoms all coming together at one time. I mean, I have to put my hand on my heart and say, I mean, I'm a cricket supporter like all of you, you know, and I think I know better than everybody else as well. But, you know, I'm privileged because I have, you know, the people I can go to consult are, you know, three-time winner of the county championship, somebody with more success than anybody else in English cricket, in one-day cricket, in Giles, you know, having steered us to four or five competition wins in the last decade or so. So I've got a lot of experience. I always figure they must know more than me. So if they don't know the answers must be very difficult to find. I honestly don't think I would have changed many players in the party that went to this World Cup, being truthful about it. I might not have done some of the things that happened. We can all talk about those in the bar afterwards. But at the end of the day, I think we went, you know, with the absence of Vince, I suppose, it was the best group available. You can argue about whether Stokes should be there, but how would he go there? My worry is what Dale said. They didn't look to me as though they were absolutely thrilled to be out there representing their country. That suggests to me that the problem is not necessarily just with the players. You know, and I'm not blaming Peter Moores, by the way. I think Peter Moores needs to have a good run at this job second time round. You know, he had the mat ripped from underneath him last time. So we need to see how this progresses. But for sure, we need our players to want to go and play for England and to enjoy the experience and to do what the Kiwis showed us this year is possible. And they're absolutely outstanding in every department. And I'm sure that we can be much better than we are.
Dale, Michael Vaughan made a comment a few weeks ago saying about Peter Moores, you just mentioned Peter Moores there, that perhaps he would be better off managing, coaching the younger England squads and actually have somebody in the top job who's more of a man manager. You didn't see those comments?
No.
I don't know.
Like I said, it's very hard to go and say what happens over there, but all I can say is what I've seen. I remember I was very good friends with Michael DeVenuto, who's now the batting coach of Australia and has been, I think, for the last 3 years. And he said, remember, Australia were also not very good a couple of years ago. And Darren Lehman took over, and one of the team talks, Michael said to me, really changed the attitude of the team, was Darren Lehman said to them, playing for Australia should be the greatest time of your life. And you guys look like you had a funeral.
Yeah.
I think that probably just sums up when I look at where they've gone since he took over. He said, I don't care if you lose, you should be so proud and be having the best time of your life, because when he played, he said, that was the best time of my life. Mm. And he said, that's all I want to do. Yes, you win some games, we're going to lose some games, but you guys look like if you could run away, you would. Mm. And that is almost what it looked like when I looked at the England team.
A lot of media people are saying, well, it's all about stats, and you know, they've got all these stats and they have to be here in 10 overs, 20 in 20 overs. And yet the England team constantly deny that. I mean, are they governed by stats? I mean, do you guys know? I mean, you must talk to one or two of these players. I mean, are they that deep, you know, in statistical know-how, Charles?
No idea, to be honest, Kev. I think you've got to be inside the changing room in a group to understand that. But I think what we've seen in the 50-over game is that you have to move with the game. You need players that are their own captains, if you like, and they're able to adapt to certain situations. And the best sides have done that. You know, yep. Dale's talking about Australia. New Zealand have picked up that mantra as well. I think they're a very brave team, and they've had the time of their lives. They've been quoted as saying that. And it goes back to going out there, adapting, feeling the game and playing the game. I think maybe England have got away from that, if you believe what you read in the press.
Sure. OK, we're coming to the end. So I'm going to ask each member of the panel. We mentioned Kevin Peterson earlier. We've got to that time of the evening. Would you have Kevin Peterson back in the England side, assuming he scores enough runs? Jimmy Adams?
No.
Good
Dale?
Good guy, don't.
I think it'll be an absolute joke if they bring him back. Yeah.
That's two people sitting on the fence. Rod.
I'm a little bit more open-minded about it. I think it's a question of getting your best 11 players and then managing them correctly. And I'm sorry to say that I think that whatever he might have done in the past, and he's done a bit, in fairness, you know, I do think that that blaming him for that debacle in Australia was most unjust. There were an awful lot of faults on that tour, and it's incorrect to lay them all at Kevin Peterson's door. That's just not right. That's my view.
Charles.
Yeah, I hear what Rod says there, but not for me. I think it's time to move on. I think they made a decision, they've got to stick with it. And look at someone like a Vince to come in and take up the mantle.
I was going to do a straw poll amongst the audience, but I don't think I need to. OK, are we going to mention this question here, Rob, before we go?
No.
No, we're not. Right, OK. Right, well, quickly, just quickly looking ahead, very quickly again, I'm going to go around the panel because we literally only have a couple of minutes. How you realistically see the season panning out? Jimmy.
I think we'll compete well in Division One. I'm not sure we'll be right at the top, but I think we'll be. I'd like to think that we won't have any fears on the other end. But it changes so quickly. Two wins, you're at the top, and a couple of losses and a couple of wins for those below you, and you're in the battle again. White ball finals day, knockout stages, and I think we've got the guys that perform well on those big stages to go one better than last year if we can get through the group. And 50 overs, well, we can't be much worse than last year, but I would like to think that we can win the 50-over comp for sure.
Dale?
Yeah, I would like to try and win everything. and I think by sort of June, July, you know where your priorities lie. Hopefully you're in every competition. I think that the club has given me a squad that can definitely do that, and it's just a matter of, you know, getting the best out of them and going and doing it on in the middle. I think you can talk and talk and talk, but end of the day, it's what we do out there, and that's what I've got to get right.
Okay, last word from Rod. So, Giles?
I'd agree with what the guys have said there, but also I'd like to add I'd like to see some of our players pushing for England. James Vince is the obvious one, but others come through by the end of the season, and some young players pushing for first team places as well.
Good. Rod, finally?
Yeah, I'll go with Giles on that. So of course, it's very important for us to start the season completely unbeaten. We're trying to win every competition, and that's exactly what we should do. But we measure the success of this club by more than just individual honours in one particular year. We want to try and make all of our players the best people they can possibly be, to give them the best opportunity to represent their country, their sport, and to make sure that we have an infrastructure which provides young players that can come into the team and hold their own. We've got a lot of those players knocking on the door at the moment. So, you know, I wish all of that playing staff and the management group every success this season. And more than anything, I hope you all have a great year watching us. Enjoy. Yeah.
Well, that's it. We've come to the end of our forum. Thanks to our panel, Rod Bransgrove, Dale Bankenstein, Giles White and Jimmy Adams. Good luck with the benefit year this year as well, Jimmy. Just get that in at the end. Hampshire's season gets underway, of course, on Sunday, the 12th of April, when they welcome Sussex in Division 1 of the Championship. Of course, we'll be there with live commentary like we will with all Hampshire's competitive fixtures.